Welcome to the Logic Consortium. Today on the show, we have law professor from the Indian Institute of Technology, Dr. Raju K.D. We talked to him from India in the middle of July of 2009 about an article that he wrote about the Indian educational system. And we talked to him about the ideas in the article and how they relate to the American educational system, some of the controversy around things such as private schools and vouchers and vocational schools. And then we talk about issues of trade and outsourcing of jobs to India and their positive or negative effects on the American economy. So please stick around. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, speaking.
Hi, this is the guy from Chicago.
Hi, how are you?
How you doing?
Yeah, very fine, very fine.
I very much appreciate you speaking with me.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Because of long time, you know, we are so busy, so we were not able to make it.
Well, as you know, I want to talk about some of the issues in your paper, the Indian education sector growth and challenges, and some other issues like trade and outsourcing of jobs.
Yeah.
Great. Well, first I want to talk about India specifically and talk about how the economic development has affected the education system or vice versa.
So how the opening of economy is connected to Indian education, and for the last 7 or 8 years, there is a close relationship between the economic development in India and the development of education sector, especially the higher education sector. So when you look into the pre-independence, our primary education system was in a very poor state, also as well as the higher education system. So immediately after the independence in 1947, the government took initiations to set up the primary level education and even to the higher secondary level. More importance was given in the different five-year plans for setting up schools and the primary education. But after the 80s and 90s, the higher education sector were given more importance, especially after 1990. The private sector, that is the one of my paper I specifically wrote on the private sector entrance in the Indian higher education sector. So you can find that the private sector entrance during the 90s, and the government promoted the private higher education, especially in the engineering sector. And the engineering sector spread to other sectors like medical, and as well as the subjects like social science. And presently, the government, but still as of date, there is no control or there is no regulation with regard to private education in India. So when I look into the Indian whole education system, the India is one of the toughest or oldest tradition of higher education, from setting up of universities from Nalanda, Elwad, and all those places, universities, to the present system. I can find that there is an enormous changes in the education system which help the country to develop economically. That is my view on the economic development and higher education. Back to Bex.
And of course, with the ever more integrated world that we have,
yes,
the knowledge needed to advance societies is also changing.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So when we look into the technological development and connected to the education sector, you can say that. So I'm a lawyer. I'm basically a lawyer, completely a lawyer. I was teaching in a law school, and presently I'm teaching in Indian Institute of Technology. So the IITs, it is the short names are IITs, and very famous all over the world with their brand name. The Indian Institute of Technology's IITians are all over the world, and you can find n number of IITians in the Silicon Valley. So the technology, how the technology and education so linked, and we are, the Indian, are the leaders in the software sector. How? Because of, due to our English education, first I would emphasize that our English education and linked with the governmental policies on technological advancement made us the expertise or more techies in India to serve the developed countries like the United States, Europe, and other parts of the world to work on especially in the software industry. So they are not only contributing to the Indian economy or not only contributing to the developed countries like the US, they are contributing to the entire world through the Indian education system. So I think the Indian education system, especially the technical education system at the higher education level are very sound. So that contributed, I think, and more technological advancements are happening in the higher education sector. So I'm very sure that the government is coming up with a lot of programs for computer education, even at the lower primary level. That is a good sign for further integrating the technology with education and development. Back.
Along that same line, one area that India is very strong in is technical, as you mentioned, is technical and vocational education. And you mentioned how the government plays a big part in this, how state and central government offices are in charge of manpower training in their sectors, operating ITIs, industrial training institutes. Can you talk about these and the advantages that you see of in vocational education?
Sure. So I'll briefly tell you what is the system of technical education at the lower level and also the system at the higher level. So in the lower level, you can say that it is starting with the school education. So once you complete the 10th standard in India, so you can go for higher education or you can go for technical education. So the first steps are known as ITIs, industrial training institutes, ITI, immediately after the 10th standard. So all over India, you can find n number of ITI established by the state governments, and the students, according to their aptitude, they can go for the soft skills like electrician, plumber, or electronics, or welding, like that. N number of courses are run by this ITI. So that is immediately after the 10th class. So, and immediately after the 10th class, there is another branch, which are mostly known as polytechnic colleges. So polytechnic colleges are also working all over India, all the states, run by the state governments. And it is the ITI is almost a 1 year or 2 year course. And these polytechnic colleges are running a 3 year diploma course. So they will get the ITI is a certificate course, and the polytechnic courses are 3 year diploma courses. So it is a little bit higher level of learning for a period of 3 years, and then the people go to different industries. So these are the lower level, and then ITCs, industry training centers, are also working at the private sector. These are the lower layer of technical education. And in the higher level, when you come to after the plus two education, that is 10 plus two education, the lot of lags of people appear in different entrance examinations for entering into the different engineering institutes all over India. And the premier ones are IITs, and then you can see that NITs, IITs, Indian Institute of Technologies, then NITs, National Institute of Technologies, and now a different layer of institutes are established by the government of India in cooperation with the state governments for higher technical education in India. This is the setup of technical education. So once a person completing a BTech degree or at the higher level MTech or PhD, so most people from IITs, they just enter into the industry immediately after their BTech. So you can see that a vast opportunity is waiting at the higher level. As well as the soft skill people, you can say that lower level people, they will go to the companies for working as welders or electricians or electronics, those who are from the diploma level as well as from the certificate level, and all management cadres are from the higher education level. This is the basic system. You can see that, in short, the basic system of the technical education in India. Back to back.
Professor? Hello?
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 Yes.
You know, it seems it's much different than the United States system in the sense that you don't see many vocational and technical schools in the United States. Do you think?
Exactly.
Do you can you talk about that a little bit and maybe some of the effects of that?
Yeah. So I can tell you. See, the government started here immediately after the plus two. Lot of vocational training centers. That means the vocational training centers, exactly, because you cannot compare the United States with India, because, of course, you know that the people, those who are, their per capita income is, when it is uncomparable, and that most of the people want job immediately after maybe their plus two or immediately after their graduation level. So they go for jobs. So the vocational education system give you a direct exposure to the developing soft skills. So I think probably that is missing in the United States. But if you look into the European system, right from the fifth standard, there is a they start the soft skill development in their schools, and then they can go to the vocational training centers in the Europe. But I think the United States, the vocational training, I don't have exact idea, but they never start from the 10th standard onwards. But the countries like developing countries require more and more soft skilled people for catering the industries to develop and thus to contribute to the economy in general. So that is my feeling. Let's break back.
Professor?
Yeah.
Okay, one thing that I found very interesting that you said is when you mentioned how many people argue that if the education sector wants to be more efficient, it should leave it to the market forces. But then you,
exactly.
And then you point out how this argument mainly undermines the consideration of education provided being a public and social good.
Yeah. Can exactly. You, I would very much interested to you answer this question, because there is a great discussion in going on in India presently. Whether we should give to the private sector. So the discussion is started in the 90s, the private sector and the public sector. But I personally feel that in the context of the new government, as you know that in India, there is a new government re-elected, the Congress government in place, and the present, the education minister, the human resources minister, Mr. Kapil Sibal, said that the Indian education sector is going to be opened to the foreign counterparts. It simply means that the Indian education sector is going to be opened for market forces to some extent. But when that is good for India, I personally feel that that is good for India. Let the Harvard and Columbia or good schools, good education institutions in United States can come over here and then set up their institutions, and the Indians don't have to go to the United States, or they don't have to go to Australia for their good higher education. That is one part of it. Then come to the social good. The government set up for the Indian strength itself is in the public sector education system in India, because the mass people, the mass poor people, cannot afford the burden of the financial liabilities with regard to the private education. So I personally feel that there should be a balance between this private education sector and the public education sector. Let the government set up more and more education institutions for the poor, those who cannot afford, and at the same time, let a world-class education comes to India. So I personally feel that I'm in favor. So in one of my paper, in education paper, I told India must open its education sector for the foreign institutions. So I think that is going to happen sooner or later in a short span of time, because the government is already put a policy and they are very positive on opening the higher education sector for the foreign education providers. With regard to market forces, because I specialized in the World Trade Organization agreement and the services agreement, it is still a bargaining power, or you can say that the developed countries and developing countries arguing for the free movement of persons from country to country, and but still it is not happened. So I personally feel that the market forces, the education sector at present in India cannot be handed over to the market forces. Government requires a regulator to regulate and balancing between the public sector and the private sector for further growth of India. That is my opinion.
And you do advocate, as you just mentioned, for private money in education and accountability.
Exactly.
And accountability of schools and teach,
yeah,
and the teachers and a certain role for market forces. This is a big divide in the United States about between the left and the right, whether there should be...
I think it is not only the United States, it is in India as well.
Can you talk about this divide?
Yeah, exactly. So in India, so I can tell you frankly that there is a huge opposition. You can say that a huge opposition against opening up of the education sector. Because there are so many reasons. The first reason, as you mentioned in the U.S., that the left and right, of course, in India as well, the left, the left fingers, they feel that it's going to damage the entire, the foundation of the Indian education system. That is their argument. So especially they argue that this cannot be, that the education cannot be affordable to the mass poor, the majority poor, and it will be the only affordable to the upper class or the upper middle class. So that is the left argument. About the right argument, as I said, the right argument is very clear. So India is one of the countries which sent the largest number of students to other foreign countries. Of course, the United States is one of the countries that is getting largest number of students after the China. And we are sending a sizable number, almost 1 lakh students, we are sending to the Australia. So there is a huge flow of funds. I think in some point of time in my paper I mentioned that almost 3 trillion at that point of time, it's a business all over the world, and more than 1 billion money is going from India to abroad, to other countries for higher education. So my argument is that, so why can't this money be spent in India itself? So there is a great divide between left and right, and both of them argue in their own cases. I think the left argument is to be given more importance when the public good is concerned at the primary level education. But at the higher level education, I feel that the private investment is welcome because the government don't have the money to invest in mass for the higher education sector. So the private sector should come, but that should not be left to the market forces at this point of time. A regulator is required to balance the left and the right side. That is my opinion.
In the United States, I guess the right argues that there needs to be market forces so the bad schools don't stay in business.
Yeah, exactly. In India... So you can see that the same argument is there. In India, it is other way round. If there is bad schools, still it is the regulated sector. The education sector is regulated, and it is not open to the market forces. You cannot start a shop, a school, tomorrow morning without the necessary permissions. So it is works within a circle of permissions and within a boundary level. You require sufficient infrastructure. You require sufficient number of teachers, you require a basic infrastructure, then only you will be permitted to start a school. So without the basic necessities of a school, you cannot start in a school in India. So the question comes, again, when you take the English education in India, mostly it is the contribution of private education sector. So if you are not good, you will perish. That is exactly the market forces. Here in India as well, the parents go to the best schools. And the bad schools will perish itself, whether it is government school or it is private school. I think that is the same situation as in India and the United States. I couldn't find any difference between this particular aspect with regard to a developed country and developing country. So if you are not good, you will perish. That is the basic theory. So I couldn't find any difference in any other countries. Yeah, back.
What do you think of that basic theory? If you're not good, you'll perish. Do you in general?
So in India?
Anywhere.
Anywhere in the world, it is very clear, the survival of the fittest. So if you are providing good education, the people will come to you. If you are not good, the people will discard you. That is the basic theory in education sector.
I wanted to ask you a couple things. There's still this idea in places that countries are in competition in their educational sectors. And that the advance of one country comes at the detriment of another country.
Yeah.
What do you think about this?
For example, I can give the example of United States itself. When for up to the last year, you can see that United States is one of the countries receiving largest number of students. And when you look into the 2008-09 statistics, the number of students have decreased. And they are migrating to other places like maybe Australia. Of course, in Australia there are problems are now going on. So in the next year there will be very less number of students are getting from India and to Australia. But the students are finding more and more places like Singapore and other countries as their education destination. So I would say that the Australia in the last year or last 2-3 years, they are massively arguing or massively advertising as a higher education destination. So I would ask you, do you think that is affected the United States as a country providing a quality higher education, or they are receiving less number of students because of their quality, or whether it is related to any other problems like ethnic problems or racial problems or like some other reasons? So that I want to know from you, actually.
I don't know. I think that the goal should be increasing the knowledge base of the world and incorporating some of your suggestions, this public-private industry institution academic stuff. I thought that was so interesting what you mentioned. I don't think that one country's benefits of education come at the other country's detriment. I think we're all trying to find a cure for cancer and a car that runs on water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely, that's true.
But this leads me to one other thing. I wanted to ask you, as someone with their PhD in international trade, I want to talk, a lot of people talk about opening up of there's a lot of opinions about opening up of global financial markets and opening up of global product markets. You have a lot of people in the U.S. who talk about opening up trade and outsourcing and how that's bad for the American worker.
I would. That is my favorite subject, and definitely I would comment on this particular subject. See, look, so when the World Trade Organization came into existence in 1995, and at that point of time, the number of countries were around 120. And you can see that now the number increased to 153, which totally carries almost 98% of the world trade. So what does it mean? So there is more and more globalization. So when we come to the outsourcing, I think the outsourcing is good for the American companies and American economy. The world becomes so small, and there is a lot of technical people are working from India in the U.S. And for example, I can tell you the exact example. And when our open sky policy came and India opened up its open sky, there is n number of pilots all over the world come to India for employment. So it is a small world. So whether it is Americans are working in India or Indians are working in the U.S., it doesn't matter, because the world has become so small. It is a small global village, and the regulator is the World Trade Organization. So you don't have to regulate the movement of people from one place to other place. So the BPO sector or the outsourcing is good for the American economy in general, and the American companies are making more and more money out of that. So when you come to the job loss, so everybody, even the present president, Obama, talks about the loss of jobs or job cuts in the United States. See, it's only a other part of the coin, I would say, that, you see, if the global recession is going on, the job cuts are not only in the United States. Job cuts are going on in UK, job cuts are in all over Europe, and the job cuts are in India as well. And you can find that the software companies are cutting a lot of jobs in India and other sectors as well. So the losing jobs are, I would say, that nothing to do with outsourcing. So how the law and economics, the mostly economics says, if the efficient utilization of resources, then that will give you more profit and more growth rather than job losses. And you can create a lot of jobs in other sectors rather than the outsourcing sector. So that is my opinion on. So job loss is not due to the outsourcing. So you cannot attribute that only to the outsourcing sector. That is my opinion on the outsourcing. Back.
That's very interesting. But one other thing that you hear a lot is that the outsourcing pushes down American wages.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely fine. If you are charging a particular product, if your competitor comes and is offering the more quality product in a lower price, of course, so the consumers will prefer a higher quality, a lower price product. So exactly happened this. So the Indian, the BPOs, the Business Process Outsourcing Centers in India are providing a value-added service to the American companies. And it is adding growth to the American economy rather than, losing jobs in the U.S. So these companies can invest more on other sectors and create jobs for more and more jobs in the United States. So it's very clear that, it is nothing to do with the outsourcing as such. So that is my opinion on this.
Professor, I really appreciate you talking with us today. Thank you so much. I hope I can talk to you again in the future sometime.
Yeah, sure. 100%. Of course, I'm a Fulbright scholar. I was there in the University of Illinois for more than 6 months. I spent some time in the University of South Carolina and also in George Washington University in 2005-06 as a Fulbright visiting scholar. So, of course, I have a flavor of, the all working system of the United States education system. So I hope the interview is useful to your viewers as well as your policymakers. Thank you, Greg, very much.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Logic Consortium, and that was our interview with Dr. Raju KD, coming to us from Kharagpur, India, talking about his paper, The Indian Educational Sector, Growth and Challenges, and talking about some of his views on trade and outsourcing of jobs. And we're going to be having in the next couple weeks on the show some opposing viewpoints, a little bit of a rebuttal to Dr. Raju KD's views. And so please visit us again. Thanks so much to Matt Hudson and Scientific Map for this music. Have a good day.